you'd say Parshas Lechel is where technically you can probably make the argument to say Jewish history starts in Parshas Lechel, because we are finally introduced in depth to Avraham Avinu. First Jew, depends, you know, on your argument, but definitely the founding father of Judaism. To get a real appreciation of Avraham Avinu, this hit me only a few years ago. A few years ago, I realized that. So the first thing we have to know about Avraham Avinu is, what year was he born in?
1948.
Very good.
Somebody in my family, the closest date of birth, that's why.
Oh, okay.
Year of birth, that's how I remember.
Because I pride myself on that. One of the things that the kids should know after they finish my class is what year Avraham was born. 1948. Not modern 1948, but from creation. So we all know that Avraham Avinu was the first one, whether 3 years old or 40 years old, to recognize one God, monotheism. And then he made it into his life's mission to spread the word, so to speak, about one God. To get rid of paganism, statues, carvings, all the idol worship. So I once read to one of my classes, the Rambam, he writes down the history of how idol worship started. So in the laws of idol worship, Perek Aleph, Halacha, Aleph, Beis, and Gimel, there's no halacha, it's just history. And he starts off saying that it really started very innocently. There was no malicious intent to deny God at the beginning. But it started off, people understood there's a God because of Avraham Avinu. But at the same time, this is before Avraham Avinu. But at the same time, they recognized the awesomeness of God compared to themselves. And they couldn't come to grips with the fact that they, with their little petty issues, which a God as great as him, who's running the world, going to take time out to listen to me? Just imagine, I want to give one of my kids a birthday present, and I can't find it in any of the stores. So I march down 16th Street, break into the White House, get through all the security, get to the Oval Office, knock on the door, come in! He goes, Mr. President, I'd like to introduce myself, Rabbi Sandberg. Nice to meet you. How can I help you? Oh, by the way, during Lincoln's presidency, you were able to do that. And they fought with him to put security in because of the tensions of the time. So just imagine that. You can just go to the White House, knock, I'd like to see the president. Okay, let's see if he's busy. So just imagine today doing that. And you do it. How can I help you? I want to buy my kids a birthday present. And I can't find it in any of the stores like Target, Macy's, and all that. Can you help me with that? He goes, no problem. Gets on the bat phone, calls up, makes a few phone calls. Amazon Prime will have be at your house in 2 days. How can that be? Why would a big, gigantic, so to speak, God be interested that I can't get something at Target? So therefore, he thought of this idea, maybe there are secretaries we can go to, and they'll deliver the message to God. That's called the sun, moon, and the stars. They're like the secretaries. So after conceiving this notion, I'm reading the translation, they began to construct temples to the stars and offer sacrifices to them. They would glorify them with words and bow down to them, because they thought by doing that, they are really fulfilling the will of God. They're not believing that the stars are powerful. They're just the go-between. They're the secretary. So if you give honor to the secretary, you're automatically giving honor to God himself. That's how it started off. Sounds innocent. Sounds well-meaning. Instead of bombarding God with all these requests, maybe he's too busy. He has no time for us. The problem was that eventually, once you let the genie out of the bag, and you start using the secretaries as the go-between, that eventually they become the gods themselves. We all know the most important person in school is the secretary. Wish Marlene was here. So,
either that or the janitor.
Yeah. I'll go with the secretary. You always say you want to butter up the secretary, you can get whatever you want. So then they started worshiping the sun, moon, and the stars. And they forgot about God. And then false prophets came in. You know what a prophet could do. I'm speaking the name of the Lord. And they're encouraging the worshiping of these secretaries. So eventually what happens, as the Rambam writes, these practices spread throughout the world. People would serve images with strange practices, one more distorted than the other. Offer karbanos to them, bow down to them. This is a key quote. As the years passed, God's glorious and awesome name was forgotten by the entire population. It was no longer part of their speech or thought, and no longer knew him. Sounds like Russia. God was wiped out from the lexicon. Wasn't in the dictionary. God? What's that? Who's that? We're saying Baruch Hashem every three words. Imagine that time, that generation, that world. There's no Baruch Hashem, there's no Amir Hashem, there's no Be'ezras Hashem. None of that. Totally not even in their thought process. It started innocently and ended up into what he just said. God was totally forgotten from the world. That's the world Avraham Avinu was born into. So as we say Avram HaEvri, Avram the Hebrew, which is explained as the one on the other side, that makes more sense after this learning the Rambam. Literally, it was the whole world against him. Because at some age, between 3 and 40, that was the world Avram was born into. He was really one against the world. And he made his life's mission to try to change the world. To introduce this concept back again that there's a God behind the show, turning the wheel, so to speak, of the whole world, supervising us, intimately involved in our lives, who has the time and the patience. Yes, if you're missing something in your life that you can't get from Target, you can ask him. You have to reintroduce that concept into the world, into the civilization. That's why I became the father of monotheism. Because until then, you know, idols are us. Idols are us. And his father was the owner. We all know the story that Avram took over the store for an afternoon, broke all the idols, had this whole argument with his father. His father turned him into Nimrod, got him arrested, and then eventually he was thrown into the fire costume. with family like that. So now you can get a glimpse into the power and the commitment and the convictions of Avraham Avinu. If you know the history of the world that he's born into, he had a real struggle. You know, it sounds like he had to struggle himself to figure it all out. It didn't come to him like this. He had to change his own culture of thinking, because that's what he was ingrained with. Imagine helping out your father in the auto store every single day, and now all of a sudden you have to come to the realization it's not right. But Parnassa, what are you going to do with the family business? That's the greatness of Avraham. Once he realized it was wrong, it's wrong, and you can't go back into the shop anymore. Which I think goes to the next idea of, so what's wrong with idol worship? I want to connect to something. So I feel very connected to the Reichler. So I bow down to it, I talk to it, I pray to it. What's wrong with it? The answer is, if I make my own statue and pretend I put power into it, you're not putting power into the statue. You're really adding power to yourself. You're trying to form God in your image. If I want God to have an outstretched arm, I'll have one. If I want him to have a smiley face, I'll have one. If I don't want him to be nice and happy, I'll give him a sad face or an angry face. Because my God is an angry God. He's the God of vengeance. That's my image of God. Avraham, on the contrary, this is the will of God, and I'm going to mold myself into his image. We're B'Tselem Elohim. God is not B'Tselem Adam. That is a great mistake. And in a way, we're all somehow guilty of that mistake on some level. When we're told you can't do something, and all of a sudden you say, well, and you start to rationalize your behavior, even though you know you're wrong, but you want to do it anyway. You say, well, if I do it this way, it's not as bad. If I do it, if no one's looking, for sure it's okay. Then that's Avodah Zarah. You're making your own statues in your image. Because this is what I want God to think, because that's what I want to think. So instead of changing myself, I change God. Yeah?
What about dominating a kid for each other? Can't that turn into
like... It could, correct.
So, but people do it.
Because you're not davening to the tzaddik, you're davening to God in the schus, on the merit.
Let's say somebody's answered and they always keep on doing it, and then they're like believing in that power. Is that like l'ilu nishmas? Like, how does that work? Because I remember hearing a story of somebody who was told to stop doing it because she was like depending on it.
I would say if it goes that far, yeah I hear there's a problem. I once spoke to a Rebbe, I think I told you this conversation once, or three times, or four times. When I saw this Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael a year and a half ago, so I was telling him that God doesn't demand much. It was the same conversation. I told him I went to Reb Chaim Kanievsky for a bracha early that week. I told him, that honestly, it was a turnoff, because it's all pushing and shoving. You get to see him for a split second, you get a bracha v'atzlacha buha. And you know, with my health issues, I really wanted to sit down and talk, you know, talk. I don't know how I was going to talk to him, but you know, just be in and out. Everyone would like that, but it's like physically impossible, but the pushing and the shoving. So I told my Rebbe, I didn't like that. It's not my style. He goes, the reason why people do that, they run to Gedolim, and they run to all to the next Segula, whether it's Perek Shira, going to the Kosovo for 40 days, the segula of the month, is because they don't believe in their own power of tefillah. For that point.
Yeah. We have to go with what's real first. Do the right things and, then, try, and then do the schools. Don't do the schools and not do all the other things.
Yeah, you got to go basics. Basics is diving. I remember a few years ago, I always thought of teaching Parshas Chayesara in third grade. That's the parsha of Shiduchim. Eliezer goes to find the Shiduch for Yitzchak. So when he's hearing the instructions from Avram, Avram says, I give you bracha, you'll be matzliach. So now you're going on a very important mission with a bracha from the Gadol Hador, undisputed Gadol Hador, that you're going to be matzliach. So he gets it to his destination, unpacks the car, the camels. What's the first thing he does when he gets there? He davens for Hatzlacha. So a kid asked, why are you davening? You got a bracha. What could go wrong? The Gadol Hador gave you a bracha, be a matzliach. Why are you davening? It's like money in the bank. So he said, first of all, great question. Thought about it for a few seconds. To teach you that your tefillah is greater than anyone else's bracha that gives it to you. As my Rebbe said, don't underestimate your power of your own tefillah. Don't just, oh, I got a bracha from Ruchayim. I'm set. No, you got to daven yourself. God wants to hear from you. He's testing you, not Reb Chaim. The idea is to bring the tefillah out of you, to make that connection. You don't push it off and give it to someone else. Because once you do that, you start getting used to it. As you said, I don't have to daven anymore. I have a segula. I have a bracha. Now, that means we shouldn't get brachas at all? No, I'm not saying that. I'll give you an example. Excuse me for the sports example. In football, you have to go 100 yards to get a touchdown. Sometimes the runner is getting closer to the touchdown, and when he gets to the 1 yard line, which is 3 feet away from the end zone, he's met by 5 defenders, probably all 300 pounds. What do you think the chances of getting into the end zone? You got like 1,500 pounds blocking you. Not very good. So a lot of times, his offensive teammates, which weigh 300 pounds, go in back of him and start pushing. So he's like in the middle of this two brick walls, one pushing the other way, this way, and the other one pushing the other way. And with the help of his teammates, he's able to go those 3 feet into the end zone and score. Because he couldn't do the last yard himself. He needed some help. Sometimes, your tefillah can get you to the 1 yard line. But it can't get you into the end zone. That's where the bracha comes in. The bracha could push you over the top into the end zone to get your tefillos answered the way you would like it to be answered. Or the segula that you're practicing or doing could be the same effect. It can get you over the hump. But you have to get to the hump yourself. That's why tefillah. And the extra help comes from the bracha and the segula. So that's the first thing I want to mention in the parsha, to understand Avram and the context of the civilization that he was living in. Now, personally, for me, it gave me a bigger appreciation for who Avram Avinu was. And that's also, I try to give the kids the same type of perspective. What was going on in the world back then, while Jewish history was unfolding? Because Jewish history is not unfolding in a vacuum, it's unfolding in the world. So you get a deeper appreciation of what's going on when you know what's going on in the world. So with Avram being born into a world of total atheism, he was somehow able to come to the truth of God himself, and then, even greater, decide, I'm going to spread the word. I think it was also the Rambam writes, that when you love something, you just want to share it. You just want to send out a group message, tweet it to the whole world. They say, guess what I found? So Avram said, guess what? I found God. So now I just can't keep it inside of myself. I got to spread that, the gift that I found, to the whole world so they can enjoy the same gift also. That's one. Two. Parsha starts off with Lech Lecha. God's introduction to Avram Avinu is, Shalom Aleichem, I'm God. Pack up and leave. Where? I'll show you. Leave your household, leave your birthplace, leave everything. Take your wife and whoever, your Talmidim, the Bali Tshuvas, Tshuvos that were made by Avram and Sarah, they'll join you, Lot, and just go. And eventually he ends up in Eretz Yisrael. Now Rashi teaches us, Lech Lecha, go for yourself. This travel will be for your good and for your benefit. You have to make a clean cut from your past if you want to continue on the road of the future. Difficult decision. Family is still family. But you got to make a new life for yourself. Lech Lecha, go for yourself. So I was thinking this week, each one of us is Avram Avinu in some way. Lech Lecha. Journey. We all have to take a journey through life. But Lecha, ask me your personal journey. You have to look at life through your eyes, through your prism, and personalize the journey. Ask questions, inquire, be inquisitive. Don't be afraid to bug someone if you have questions, because that's part of your journey. There's so many people out there in the world that they journey, but they don't know that they're taking a journey. They grow up in the cookie-cutter world of education. They go through the system. As Rabbi Wein would say, as a good yeshiva bracha, he was never taught to think. So, Lecha, your journey has to be your personal journey. So, if you something happens to you, don't gloss it over. Think about it. If something doesn't make sense to you, I don't want to say the word challenge it, but inquire. Get it clarified. Because that will just clarify the journey that you're on. It'll be the flashlight that helps you get to the next step in life. That's the importance of Lecha. It has to be your personal journey. As you all know, our lives are totally different. We come from different places. Coming from Brooklyn, come from outer space. So we have different families. All those things is a chulent that makes us who we are. Family, location, schooling, that's all us. Eventually, as we get older, we take all the ingredients that made us at a younger age. Now we're supposed to make it into the real us. I joke around saying that I grew up in Borough Park. When I'm serious, I grew up in Borough Park. And then people usually give me the old, sorry to hear that. Honestly, I'm not. I'm proud that I grew up in the Borough Park that I did, which is a different Borough Park than it is now. It was a whole different world. It formed me in a way, in a unique way. That if I'm living, quote unquote, out of town in the boondocks, it still gives me an appreciation of who I am, of what I saw growing up. And in a way, it anchors me when you're living among a different don't know if there's a good way to say this, different types of Jews in different locations in the United States, it gave me an anchor because I knew what I learned in school. I knew what I saw growing up on the streets of Borough Park. I remember the close-knit family block I lived on 44th Street. All that helped form me into who I am now. The family that I grew up in, the parents that I had, the siblings that I have, helped form me into where I am now. And it doesn't stop. The journey keeps going because you're put in different situations, live in different places, and you meet different people along the way. That just adds more ingredients to who you are to help you along the journey. So even though we might be moving from place to place, but the impact of where we were does... See, I didn't answer. Is that you? The impact stays with us to an extent and helps us when we need to look back at, with a perspective of what's going on at a different time in our life. So I remember when that happened there. And this is how it turned out. This is what happened. This is how I managed the situation. This is how I mismanaged the situation. And you learn from it. That's all part of your own personal journey. That's point number two. You learn from the from Avraham Avinu. Point three. This might get a little deeper. Avraham and Lot have a little quibble over grazing lamb laws. Lot's shepherds allowed Lot's sheep to graze on different people's land, which is in essence is stealing. Avraham did not allow that. You all know that from the pictures. In the coloring books, and how do you differentiate camels of Avraham and of Lot? The muzzles, of course. So, when things came to a head, Avraham said to Lot, "The world ain't big enough for the two of us here. Whichever direction you go, you want south, I'll go the other way. You want east, I'll go west. Don't worry, you have first dibs of choice. I don't care." The Nesiva Shalom explained what was going on here. So he explained, going back to the beginning of the Parsha, of Lech Lecha, he was telling Avraham, if you want to grow in Ruchnis, in spirituality, you have to minimize to the best of your ability the gashmius in your life. Because the world ain't big enough for the both of them to work together. If you want to enjoy the world as it is, there's going to be less opportunity to really get into the spirituality, the ruchnius, which your neshama really wants to enjoy. If your body overtakes the neshama, there's no room for ruchnius. The only way to enjoy the ruchnis is to minimize the gashmius. Not saying you have to fast for the rest of your life. It just means you have to minimize it, downplay it. It's essential but not important. After, you know, close to 120 years, when people look back in their lives, I don't think anyone's going to say, "I just remember the shmor from that person's wedding. It was unbelievable." I don't think anyone's going to be talking about the shmorgs and the main dishes at the kiddush, at the wedding. Because at that point, who really cares? The idea is to come to that realization at an earlier time in life. Once again, not to minimize it, to wipe it out. Just to say, it's there, I have to eat, so I'll eat. I have to drink, I have to drink. Lo thought you could have it both ways. You could have your ruchnius and your gashmius and eat it too. So that's why when he saw Sodom, he saw the gashmius. He said, I can pull it off. I can handle the gashmius and the ruchnius at the same time. We see where it got him. That was Machlokas. Now Avram ate and drank also. But Avram knew that the purpose of the gashmius in life is to raise it to ruchnius, like a carbon. Carbon is physical. The cow that is born as an animal, as a carbon, is eaten, depending on what type of animal it is. But when a kohen ate a carbon, it elevated the animal itself, and it elevated the kohen himself also. He's eating ruchnius. Now, I don't know how many people can sit down at a Friday night meal and turn the whole meal into ruchnius. It's a high order. Especially when you're going for that third piece of kugel. But that's the trick. That is what God has set for us as a goal. To minimize the importance of the gashmius, and when you need the gashmius, it's done with Shem Shemayim. When you go to sleep, it's done with Shem Shemayim. You say, I love sleep. That's a chumra a lot of people like to be machmir on Shabbos morning. We say, I'm going to sleep to get some extra rest so I'll be more refreshed for the week. Then you're turning it into a Nucha Shabbos. It's more gashmi, it's more ruchni than gashmi. That's Avram's sheet. That's what Hashem was telling Avram. Lech lecha, take your journey. The journey is what I'm going to show you, which is Eretz Yisrael, which is ruchnius. What do you have to leave behind? Beis Avicha, your father's house, Artzicha, your land. All your gashmis has to be left behind in a way, make a clean break, take a look at it differently. Now be l'tovascha, l'hanascha, for your benefit and for your good. Because the more we, it's like the seesaw. If you put more emphasis on the ruchnius, then there's less emphasis on the gashmius. And the other way around. You have to strike that balance of keeping ourselves healthy as a mitzvah, not as a thing of itself. Because otherwise, first time I ever walked into a gym, a friend of mine asked me to play racquetball. So I'd never been in a gym before. This is going back 25 years probably. And it was Hanukkah time. I walk in there to play racquetball. I think I almost fainted because the music is blaring. Everyone's working out. I said, this is much like Greek culture. Everyone's worshiping themselves. They're trying to make themselves into a god. It was just mind-boggling to me. That this is what it really looks like. Everyone's like, they're worshiping themselves in a way. And they can mold themselves into any type of God they want to be. Because you're in control of that. So if you want to exercise, you got to exercise, l'shem shemayim, stay healthy. That's why you're doing it. Doing it for the Rabbanu Shalom. Point three. Last point for the night. I remember a few years ago I gave a shiur on this. I think we might have mentioned it a few weeks ago also. Lot is saved from Sodom and Gomorrah. Can you say for what reason? What chus did he have? You would think it was because of the chesed that he did and the mysterious nefesh that he did for Hachnosis Archim, for the guests. Look what he did. though he's a little warped, willing to give up his daughter to save the guests. But he hasn't seen his nephesh. While they're banging on the door, trying to get in, he's trying to negotiate and ward them off, and they keep on banging and banging. Such a serious nefesh. That wasn't it. The fact that he ran... Well, that's already a different madrig of lowliness.
It's like also shneiros haloshon, a carefulness. You know, like, I don't know. Like sometimes I feel like, I mean, I don't want to knock our community. We're wonderful people, but I think sometimes because we are so close knit, sometimes we're not as careful about this. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, this person's.
Yeah, because we all consider ourselves family.
Right, but sometimes, you know, people's personal information needs to be handled a little more.
100%. Delicately. 100%.
I mean, not that this is like, you know, but he was sensitive to.
True.
His, you know.
100%.
And it ended up saving his life. I mean.
Well, that was this close, yeah. So the Rav Dessler, for the Mesiris Nefesh, for the Mitzvah Achnas Zorchim, that didn't help him. Not ratting out his family, that's what saved him. What's pshat in that? Now, the answer is found in Chelk Aleph of the Michtav Elio, in a section called, section he has on Bechir, free choice. Now, I remember when I gave this shiur on a Shabbos, title was, what's your sleep number? And we all know that you have beds that you have sleep numbers. If you like a firmer mattress, you can get it to the number of firmness for you. If you like it nice and mushy, where you can just sink into it, you give it another number. And both sides of the beds could be different numbers. So you have to figure out, so maybe it might take you a week or two to figure out which number do you really, really like. What's your sleep number? It's like it slides, it goes back and forth depending on what you're feeling like. The chiva is the same thing. If I asked anyone right now, God forbid, go to McDonald's, come back with a cheeseburger, I wouldn't put it on the table, Mrs. Goodman. I just offered. Who wants... free. How many people would take it? Good answer. How many people would be tempted? Good answer. Because you don't have choice in that. Because the way we've been raised and taught, cheeseburger? No way. Basbakalov? If I said bacon, probably wouldn't let it in the house. Mrs. Goodman, bacon in the house? No way. Chas v'shalom. I remember hearing on the radio, one of the sports announcers, who was Jewish, and they were talking about stuff like for Thanksgiving. Someone said about bacon. He goes, that doesn't go well in my house. I think they just, certain people, no matter how observant you are, pig? I draw the limit at that. Bacon? No way. Cheeseburgers? Okay. Fish? Shellfish? Definitely. So why is it, when it comes to a cheeseburger, is no bakhira? Because we were able to raise our bakhira level, our bakhira number, to a point where it's not a choice anymore. It's like putting your hand in a fire. That's what it's like. You see, eating treif, like putting your hand in a barbecue fire. But for some people, that's still a choice. Because they might be recently beginning their journey on to becoming more observant. So now, if they've been eating treif their whole life, now all of a sudden, no more cheeseburgers, no more Happy Meals, there's a hesitation. So that person's bechira level is different than our bechira level. But for some people, our nisayon, where we have to make a real hard choice, could be lashon hara. For other people, that's not a try. It's not a nisayon anymore, because the way we're raised and ingrained what's right and what's wrong, and it gets to a point we don't have free choice anymore, because it's so obviously against us that it's not a choice. But for those who weren't grown up that way, now they're learning about observance on their journey, on their life growth, and it does become a desire. Then you have to grapple with it. I imagine a person has a very good singing voice, then becomes frum. You run into the Kol Isha problem. I understand it to be a tremendous nisayon. Because if the singing is what you are, and that's the one thing you really, really love in life, now all of a sudden it's taken away from you, it's a hard nisayon. So that for that person, her nekudas habechira, her point of bechira is singing. Now, with some people, singing in public have a lousy voice. So it's not a nisayon. So for you, that's not a nisayon. It's not a play, that's not in the nekudas habechira. Lot, who was raised in Avram's house with chesed, achnasas archim, and seeing how Avram was mosa nefesh for that mitzvah, so when it came to achnasas archim, it wasn't a nisayon, but that was part of his essence. Therefore, it wasn't a choice for him. You have to go the extra mile to do the mitzvah, if it means putting people's lives in danger. I'm willing to do that, because that's how I was taught. Now, ratting out family apparently was not part of his nature. And he probably had a struggle to hold himself back. And because he was able to overcome that struggle and not tell Paro and the authorities the truth about Avram and Sarah, that's why he got rewarded to be saved. Because that was his mesiras nefesh. Because that's where his nekudas habechira is. Your nekudas habechira switches. It could be daily, monthly, yearly. As we grow, things become more difficult or easier. And the same thing as we fail, then things which you thought was like no-brainer, all of a sudden becomes a choice. So we have to find ours for ourselves. Where are we holding when it comes to bechira, choice? Because that's something that we have to be aware of. You have to, and all you got to do is like, as something comes up and you think about it, and all of a sudden if you say, yeah, but still, recognize that the word but still, or well, those are key words to tell you, nisayon. Once all of a sudden it doesn't become second nature, it's an nisayon. That's where you're holding. That's your bechira number. You have a choice. If you fail, you go down. If you overcome, the number goes up. Get, you know, raise the stakes. Now, I think I mentioned also that the greater you become, the Yetzer becomes greater also. That does not mean that the Gadol Dor has a bigger Yetzer to eat a cheeseburger because he's greater than it. It just becomes his Yetzer Hara is more subtle. For example, if you're a Rosh Yeshiva and you're sitting in front of the whole yeshiva of a few hundred bachurim, they're all waiting for you to finish Shmon Esrei. So the Yetzer can come to you in the middle of Shmon Esrei, slow down, makes you look better. That the other Rosh Yeshiva on the other side, he finished already. So if you go a little slower or shuckle a little better, people say, oh, look how holy he is. Look at the Kedusha of this Rosh Yeshiva. Look how he davens. That's Gaiva. That's a subtle Yetzer Hara. Most times than not, more difficult than a physical Yetzer Hara. So he might have to fight the Yetzer Hara on a different level, on a more subtle level, that no one else knows that's what he's fighting. Because it's something that's going inside his body. And we can't get inside there. So those are the 4 points. Once again, to review, to understand Avram even greater is to understand the generation he was born into, with the history before that. Point number 2 was personal journeys. Number 3, Gashmius and Ruchnius are against each other. The more you put emphasis on, de-emphasizes the other side. Point 4 is Nekudas HaBechira. To recognize where we're holding, what is considered a Nisayon for us and what is not considered a Nisayon. Thank you. Have a good Shabbos and a good week.